Welcome back to Bullseye on the Afternoon here on AM 930 WEOL and 100.3 FM. Andy Bullbarch with you until 6 o'clock tonight, and it's time now for us to head back to the hotline. The Indians, of course, involved in the Major League Baseball draft last night, made a couple of picks, and here to shed some more light on that, we've got Justin Latta with Cleveland Indians Baseball Insider. He's the editor-in-chief. You can find all of his work at IndiansBaseballInsider.com. Justin, thank you so much for joining us. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me. It's going to be good to talk some baseball, considering there isn't any actually going on.
Well, let's examine the two picks the Tribe made last night. And we'll start with their first selection, shortstop Carson Tucker, who very clearly has a solid baseball bloodline. What is it that you like about him?
Yeah, physically, I think he popped over the last year. I thought initially wasn't a totally exciting profile, but as you look at it more, he added, grew 2 inches, added 15 pounds to his frame, had a really strong start to his senior season before it got canceled. I think he homered once his junior year in 30 games, and he homered twice in 3 games before the season got shut down this year. So he's improving physically, which I think the Indians thinking there was he was somebody who would have gone higher had he played a full senior season, has a chance to stay at shortstop. I think the arm is a bit of a question, but I think it'll be good enough for him to stay there. It's more hit over power. I don't think he's going to have a whole lot of power to his profile, but he's going to have a chance to hit, make a lot of contact, and he should add a little more to his frame as well, so that might increase his power potential a little bit, but it's really at most going to be average. But he's going to be a solid player with a very reliable projection as far as, what he could become.
How much do you think the bloodline factors into this as well? I think that's enough for fans to get at least a little bit excited about seeing some of the success that his brothers had so far. How much of that do you think factors in?
Yeah, I think you look at players who have baseball bloodlines, and oftentimes the younger brother or the son or whoever it be tends to benefit a lot more from the older person in baseball, whether it is a father, whether it is an older brother or cousin or something, just learning to be around them and learning what made them successful and having the ability to work out with other major league players. I mean, Carson Tucker worked out with Cody Bellinger, with Cole Tucker. He's worked out with Trevor Bauer and Logan Allen. He had a home run off of Logan Allen back in May, the Indians Logan Allen, not the Logan Allen that's in the draft this year, when they were doing some live at-bats in the spring after things shut down. So the fact that he's been able to benefit from working with other major leaguers, I think really speaks to the Indians, and I think it speaks to the industry as a whole.
You mentioned a couple of moments ago that the projection isn't that he's going to be a big-time home run hitter, not going to hit for a ton of power, but I think it seems like, based on some of the scouting reports I've seen, that maybe, his ceiling is that he can hit for average power, which doesn't necessarily seem like a bad thing, considering where he was drafted and also at a position, too, where, yeah, there are some outliers at that position. But, as long as he hits well enough for average, whatever that means anymore, because that's kind of changed here the last 4 or 5 years, it seems like this is a guy who certainly fits in what is a pretty crowded room right now, because the Indians have all kinds of promising young middle infielders.
Yeah, it's definitely a crowded class. I think you're right, though, with the average thing, the average power. As long as he stays up the middle, I don't think the power is going to be a huge concern. I don't think they're going to be asking him to, hit 35 home runs. I mean, nobody thought Francisco Lindor was going to hit 35 home runs, but, Francisco Lindor is a very rare player. Most guys don't develop what he's developed into. If Tucker doesn't stay at shortstop, whether it's the arm or the shortstops in the system the Indians are loaded up on, push him off the position, I think he stays up the middle, whether it's, maybe second base, shortstop, and I think the power won't impact him as much there. But as long as he has the speed and the contact skills, I think he'll fit into those positions very well. I don't think you're going to see him be, a star-level player, but he's going to be a very nice, solid player and has a chance to fill one of those positions with some skills that are usually associated with those areas.
Again, we're speaking with Justin Latta, editor-in-chief at IndiansBaseballInsider.com. That's IndiansBaseballInsider.com. All right, let's talk about the second pick that the Tribe made last night. Tanner Burns, a right-hander from Auburn. He was the Indians' second pick and seems like a guy that will throw a lot of strikes, even though he's certainly not going to stand out in a crowded room, an average-sized guy, but, again, a guy that seems like he throws a lot of strikes.
Yeah, physically, he's not as gifted as Carson Tucker is on the offensive or body side. being an older player. He's 6'205", so there's not a lot of projection left in his build. But like you said, he does throw a lot of strikes. He does have, you know, 3 to 4 potentially average to above average pitches. He's made a lot of starts, and he's played in the SEC at Auburn, so he's got a good track record of success. It really isn't a super exciting profile, but I think it's one that's safe. I think there are some health concerns. He's had some shoulder issues in the past. But if the Indians feel like he's healthy, that's a guy that can move fast because he can throw strikes, because he has a deep arsenal of pitches, and he can throw them all for strikes. That profile tends to move pretty quick and tends to be pretty safe and can slot him in, you know, to the back of the rotation, whether it's 3, 4, 5, and you know what you're going to get out of him every night.
Do you think, taking a look at some of those same things, that while you don't necessarily draft a guy this high to be a reliever, I mean, sure, that does happen, but I think those instances are somewhat rare. I mean, do you think, because of all those things you mentioned, that he could potentially profile as a reliever, in that if this is a guy the Indians feel good enough about, he could potentially move through the system a little bit faster, even if that doesn't mean he'll be in the rotation?
He would obviously move faster as a reliever because he has the pitches to do so, and it would help him operate even at a higher velocity. He has, in the past, tend to lose his velocity late in the year or sometimes late in games. He can get 97, but that can fall off. And I don't know if that has to do with his history of shoulder problems or his size. So being a reliever would help him in that aspect. But I think the only reason you would consider him a reliever is, A, you want to get into the big leagues faster because you think he can impact the ball club, or it's an injury thing. So I think those are the only two things that would force the Indians to put him in the bullpen. I think probably the most likely scenario is they put him through the system as a starter and let him, you know, prove it one way or the other. And if he stays healthy, I don't think there's any reason he shouldn't be in the rotation.
And I think it's interesting you mentioned that. A couple of months ago, being down in Goodyear at spring training, it seemed like that anybody they looked at as a prospect, whether it be mid-level or high-level prospect, they always kind of went about it that way. They were going to run them through the system as a starter, and then kind of, as soon as they reach their ceiling, figure out where the best fit might be for them in their careers. But they seem to think that if you go about it as if you're going to be a starter, it's easy to scale that back and reduce your role to a reliever, as opposed to grooming you as a reliever and then trying to extend you as a starter. Seems like, you know, the first way just works so much better. Well, Justin, you also talked about this on Twitter about money matters. You know, if financial flexibility goes a long ways, especially for a team like the Indians, why is it that you think the two Tribe picks from yesterday allowed them some financial flexibility for the rest of the draft?
Yeah, I think everybody had Tucker kind of lower on the board, so I'm not sure where, you know, he was being told before the draft by whatever advisor he might have had where he was going to go. But, you know, the understanding throughout the industry right now is that Tucker's going to sign for under slot, and there was some talk I've seen about Burns potentially asking for first-round money. So Tucker's slot at 23 was about $2.93 million, and Burns at 36 was just a shade over 2, I think 2.05. I think the idea is that Tucker's going to come on under slot, and I think Burns will be right at about the slot, if not maybe slightly above. So that gives them anywhere in the range of about $700,000 to maybe $1 million, an extra bonus money today to finish off the draft, in addition to what else they have to spend the rest of those slots. So there's a lot of high school kids that drop. There's a couple of college kids that also drop farther that I think some people didn't think they would. So that gives them some flexibility to go out there and go over slot, you know, on pick 56 and beyond, to use that kind of money and get those kids into the system.
Again, we're being joined by Justin Latta, editor-in-chief at Indians Baseball Insider. Give him a follow on Twitter as well, at @JL_baseball. That's at @JL_baseball. You alluded to this a few moments ago, but I want to revisit this. You tweeted yesterday at the end of day one of the draft that there's still plenty of really good talent available. I want to go through some of those names here. Which ones that you're watching for to see if they fall to the Tribe? Which names do you think are really intriguing going into today?
Jared Kelly, a high school right-hander from Texas. I don't think he makes it to 56. I think he goes off the board soon, but he's someone that they really like. JT Ginn, he's from the SEC school as well. He had Tommy John surgery. I don't know if he'll feel like at this point he'd rather go back to school and try to earn some more money going into next year. Blaise Jordan's a high school first baseman. Well, he could be classified as a third baseman. Ton of power. He actually won the home run derby last year. at the All-Star game in Cleveland. David Calabrese, who's a Canadian outfielder, has a good hit tool, plus speed in center field, should be a center fielder. Tanner Witt's another big high school arm who's got a commitment to Texas. I think there's a good chance that he winds up going to school. I think his bonus demands are pretty high. Markavian Hentz, another high school arm who feels a good feel for spin. I think there's a good chance that he gets picked today. But money's going to become an issue at this point with a lot of high school kids. But there's a lot of names on the board today that I think fit the Indians mold, at least they've done the last couple of years.
Well, going to be interesting to see what the Indians do a little bit later on tonight in day two of the draft. And things are way, way different with the Major League Baseball draft this year. Only 5 rounds, so different than what we are used to, for sure. And that's because we're living in different times. There's no question about that. I think everybody pretty excited about the idea that most sports are going to return at some point. And most of that news has been pretty positive. Hasn't necessarily been that way for baseball, as this battle has turned pretty ugly between the owners and the Players Association as they've continued to negotiate primarily through the media, it seems. And, you know, we're at a point now, Justin, where I think people just want baseball back. And I think every time a proposal comes up, we're a little anxious, we're pretty excited, and regardless of who makes the proposal, you urge the other side to take it. Now, I know that both sides are a little bit to blame here, but anybody who's followed you on Twitter, I know you've kind of taken the player's side in this, and I want to give you a chance to kind of explain why that's been your stance.
Yeah, so, but, you know, money in baseball is so different than other sports because obviously there's not a salary cap. We don't really generally know revenues for each team, so I always kind of take a look at it financially this way, is operating in what we know in the public, and what we know is what teams spend. We know their attendance. We know what they get in TV deals. So you can always operate on those things that you know are for sure. And it just seems the way the owners are operating is, you know, Rob Manfred said it last night, that the March agreement gives him the ability to institute a 48-game season because they agreed upon that when spring training was postponed or canceled, however you want to put it. The players seem to be operating that in that same agreement, they were told they would be giving prorated, they would agree to prorated salaries, however many games would get played. And they negotiated, I think, sticking to that this whole time. So if that agreement, we don't have a lot of details in that agreement, doesn't seem like. That agreement seems to play out that, yes, they could play a 48-game schedule, but they also agreed on prorated salaries, you know, and understanding that players still make millions of dollars, but owners are billionaires, and they still have a lot of money as well. And TV, we know TV deals tend to drive revenue more than attendance these days. So I don't understand why the owners are asking for players to take 50% of a salary for what ends up being 33% of their salary for, you know, 75 games, or what they would have made for the season anyway. If they're sticking to the agreement that 48 games was agreed upon back in March, at worst case scenario, if prorated salaries were also agreed upon, I don't know why you would deviate from that as well.
How much of a gut punch do you think it's going to be, if that's what it comes to, if Commissioner Rob Manfred next week has to make it so that it's 48 or 50 games, whatever that number ends up being? How big of a gut punch do you think that will end up being for baseball, and what kind of damage do you think that could do to the sport moving forward?
I would guess more of your hardcore fans would want to see baseball come back, but I feel like they would be turned off by the fact that 48 games is really not much in the way of proving a season or seeing how things play out in a traditional sense. I do think there are some casual fans out there who feel like baseball season's too long anyway, and they'd be really intrigued by a sprint to the finish in a shorter season. I think the overarching feeling is that you're going to make a lot of fans mad if you do that, and I think they're going to make the players mad if they force that as well. And that sets up things badly for the next CBA, which expires at the end of next year. And I think the fans that know that are the ones that are probably the most peeved, because you're going to have a really short season this year potentially, and you're setting up for a very ugly labor fight that could potentially impact the 2022 season. So then you're talking about having a season and a half wiped out in the next 3 years, and that's not good for anybody.
No, not good for anybody, and you know that's another battle that I think we're not looking forward to at all. And on top of that, look, there are also some reports circulating too that there are players who have mentioned that they may not play if they end up having to go with this 48-game season. So this whole thing could get really nasty. Let's just hope that they come to some kind of an agreement here over the next 5 or 6 days before they have to implement that 48-game season. Justin, as always, we appreciate the time. Thank you so much for joining us. Great insight of the two picks that the Tribe made today and the available players for the Tribe later on today, hopefully as well, in day two of the Major League Baseball draft. And we encourage all of our listeners to check out that website, IndiansBaseballInsider.com. That's IndiansBaseballInsider.com. And you can also give Justin a quick follow on Twitter as well. That's at JL_baseball. That's at JL_baseball. Justin, thank you again.
Thank you so much. It was good to catch up.
Thank you, Justin. Again, that's Justin Latta, editor-in-chief at Indians Baseball Insider, joining us here on Bullseye on the Afternoon. Let's step aside and take a break. We will come back with more right after this here on AM 930 WEOL and 100.3 FM.